Airchecks.com, part of the Heritage Media Group.
WJIB now presents Let's Talk About Radio, a weekly talk program about the electronic media here in the Boston area and beyond. Hosted by several broadcast enthusiasts, looking at radio and TV not only from a business perspective, but also as a hobby.
Well, welcome to edition number 27, I believe it is, of Let's Talk About Radio. We've been here 27 weeks now. That's just over half a year. They haven't kicked us off. They renewed our contract, right? We're talking on Let's Talk About Radio. We do this every week right here. And see, with me today, my name is Bob Bittner. That's Peter George over there. Yep. Say hi, Peter. Scott Feibusch.
Hi there.
And we have a very, very special guest this week on Let's Talk About Radio. And we'll let Scott introduce this fine gentleman who we all know and love.
Oh, thank you, Bob. Okay. There are not many people in this business who manage to stay in this business and stay sane for 50 years. Our guest tonight has been in this business for 50 years, whether he's stayed sane or not. Would, I guess, be a matter of some question. He probably wouldn't admit to it. There are also not many people in this business who have worked, who can list on their resume WCOP, WMEX, WHDH, WEEI, WRKO, and WBZ. This gentleman can. Norm Nathan is heard, of course, weekend overnights on WBZ, and has been in the business 50 years, and we're very honored to have him here with us on Let's Talk About Radio.
Thank you. I never would have guessed that when I got in first. I mean, that I would have lasted that long. I'm still not sure the microphone is really on and that I'm actually on the air. I'm not even convinced of that. But when you think of the longevity, and incidentally, next month in May is the 51st year. That's incredible. Franklin Roosevelt was the president when I got into radio. Can you imagine that? And World War II was still on. I'm trying to put this in perspective for you, Scott, because you're only about 7 years old, and you don't know anything beyond last week. But it's been a long time. It's been a great joy. You know, most people have jobs that they either tolerate. Well, real jobs, yeah, but they either tolerate them or they hate them. And here we are in a business that's really kind of fun for the most part.
Yeah.
That's a long answer, and I don't even remember the question.
If in fact there was one, but it doesn't matter because that's what we do here is we don't really ask a question, and everyone answers it anyway. Let's go all the way back to the beginning, 1944, May of 1944 at WCOP.
Yeah. A lot of the stations you notice that you mentioned do not exist anymore. Yeah, I worked part-time at WCOP. It was in the hotel. It was called COP because it was in Copley Plaza Hotel. And I worked weekends. I was 18. I got the job the day before I graduated high school. So that was kind of fun. I worked at that weekends also. I seem to be back to doing what I did way back then. And I lasted a month and I got fired. Then I went to a WESX in Salem, and I got taken off the air after about 3 months, and because I couldn't pronounce R's and L's. I sounded like Tom Brokaw and Barbara Walters combined. I would say, well over, time and board. Funny words like that. Anyway, I was made news editor, but I got fired from there after 5 months. Then I went to WMEX, where I worked for about 6 years, and then I got laid off. And I thought, I'm starting to really make it now. I didn't get fired. I only got laid off. And anyway, then all the rest of the stations that you mentioned, things began to move up eventually.
Let's go back to MEX. Now, this was before the big Arnie Ginsberg Top 40 MEX. What was that station like back then?
It was probably one of the worst run and most stupid stations that ever existed on the face of the earth. It really was. Arnie Ginsberg worked there. He was an engineer. I was 18 when I began. Arnie is about my age, roughly about the same age. He was an engineer, and he used to come down into the... This is, again, before Woo Woo Ginsberg and the good guys and all, when MEX really started doing well later on. But they didn't do well then. Arnie would come out down into the studio and say to us, boy, that's the part of the business I want to be in. Something like, we would laugh at him for silly voice, you know. Meantime, he did very well, and a lot of the people he said that to who laughed at him got out of the business. But it was the kind of program where, the kind of station we had really weird programs. For example, during that period, there were late night big band broadcasts. You care to hear this, Scott?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, if I'm getting boring, just say, hey, shut up.
This is what we invited you down here for.
Okay. There used to be big band broadcasts at night from 11:30 to 1 on the networks. You know, Glenn Miller, Tommy Dorsey, Count Basie, all the big bands. If you were with a local station like WEI at that time, they were CBS. And so locally, they would distinguish. They would carry local programs, but like from the Copley Plaza Hotel, some of the big hotels, the decent bands, Sammy Dale, some of your older listeners would remember those. But WMEX would have the cockamamie bands. We would have, from the cameo room of the Hotel Avery, Tommy Carr and his Men of Melody, which if they could get through two notes out of six in tune, that was really something. We broadcast wrestling bouts on radio. Would you believe that?
I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, we actually broadcast. This is before television now. And I was the color man. I would say, well, Frank Sexton, the world's champion, certainly took that one with an inside crotch, body lift, and slam. And you have to remember, the language in radio then was very guarded.
Yes.
You couldn't say much of anything. But to say, and it could be legitimate because that was really what was happening, to say an inside crotch, body lift, and slam, a legitimate hold, that was exciting. As a matter of fact, at the Hotel Cameo, the cameo room of the Hotel Avery, we'd pretend we slipped, but we would do this on purpose. We'd say from the cameo room of the Hotel Overy. So to say Overy and crotch the same night was really just, that was really a big night. And I was only, you know, like 19, 20 years old at the time. And now when I think of what they say on radio and television, that's like nothing. Is it like nothing here, or are you getting nervous, Bob?
he owns the station. He doesn't have to
worry.
Oh,
that's right. He doesn't have to worry.
Yeah. It's not going to have the boss coming
in. It's not among the FCC's words that they don't want. No, it's not.
No, we don't come close. This conversation doesn't come close to anything else.
We had cowboy acts. Let me just tell you this, because I know you'll be thrilled by this. We had, we call them cowboy and hillbilly. Now they call it country and western, and they have whole stations patterned after it. But they'd be local people who'd come on the air, and usually they'd be, well, like we had, for example, Jim Nevada and his Rainbow Riders. They were from Chelsea. The farthest west we had any cowboy act was a guy named Doug Guerin, who I still am in contact with, who's a nice man. He came from far west. He came from Wellesley. And when they got on the air, they would try to sound like those old movies. You know, they would go to these, I think it was Monogram Movies used to put out these westerns in sepia tone, which was brown and white.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was because they couldn't afford color, and they didn't want to say black and white, so they compromised with this stuff that looked like it had been in a can for years under the ground. Anyway, they would try to talk like what they thought the cowboys would talk, only would be interlaced with heavy New England accents. So they would say stuff like, well, Padna, what do you say we go out yonder to the chuck wagon? You want her? Those are the kind of programs we had. The station was awful, but I was just a kid, and it was kind of fun.
Were people listening?
Oh, no, we had no listeners. You kidding, Scott? Come on, give me a break. Nobody was that stupid, but we didn't care. It was kind of fun, but it's where I learned jazz. Nat Hentoff, who later is still a writer and syndicated column and all that. He had a jazz show, and that's how I got to love jazz quite a lot, because I would listen to watch his show and all the weirdos. I thought they were weirdos that came up. I turned out to be one of those weirdos because I love jazz myself. You have another provocative question?
Did you used to host a jazz show?
Yes, I did. When I got to WHDH, I got the all-night show. I don't know. That was at night. It was called Sounds in the Night. It was the Sounds in the Night ran between 57 and 68. I'd already been in radio quite some time, going nowhere at the worst station in the world, WMEX. When eventually I got to HDH, and that was my first break, and to do the all-night show. Would you like to know how I happened to be given the show or anything like that?
Absolutely.
Do you remember the Andrea Doria and the Stockholm when they collided off the Cape?
That was 56, right?
That was 56, yeah, around the 56, 57, yeah, in that area. We were owned by the, WH Station was owned by the Herald Traveler at the time, and we used to go off the air, not off the air, but we'd go automated at midnight. The announcer, the recorded announcement would be, and now here's recorded music all through the night, or something like that, and it would go back to the transmitter where they put a jukebox on it, so however they did it back then, and it would be automated music. So when the collision came of the two ships, and we had no newsman, nobody on duty, because it was automated, they decided, since they're owned by newspapers, the Herald and Traveler, they ought to put somebody on just to sit there in case something happens. So I had submitted an audition tape for an all-night show at that time. And so I got it. And mostly it was to be on and play a half hour of uninterrupted music and that kind of stuff. But I began cheating on it and playing jazz and eventually grew into that. But that's how Sounds of the Night began. Isn't that a fascinating story?
Yeah.
You want to buy the movie rights?
That must have been quite a move up then, going from MEX over to HDH.
Yeah, it was.
I imagine you did have listeners at HDH.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, the Sounds of the Night was a popular show. It just changed my whole life. I was a summer replacement there and all. That's how you got into bigger time radio. You auditioned for a summer replacement job. So I left MEX, where I'd been hired back after being laid off, took the summer replacement job, and eventually by the second year they kept me on a little bit longer. But this summer replacement is kind of fun. That's a kind of a cattle call where they would have a whole bunch of people in there, like about 20, 25, competing for a job, for the summer replacement job. But you figure the only way you're going to get on permanently is kind of auditioned for the 2 or 3 months that the summer job entailed. And it's a very nervous thing. You'd read a little bit of this, and you'd do a disc jockey thing and a few other things, and then they would pick whoever they thought was the best. They would even do introductions to classical music, which on the audition, which I never understood because we never played classical music there. But it was obviously a script left over from 1836. But anyway, that's how I got it. Gee, that's a dull story. Even I was not interested in that. Ask me something else so I can bore you some more.
Well, I want to hear more about Sounds of the Night. You were there for 11 years, and I understand, I'm cheating here. I'm looking at the list of Norm Nathan, 50 years of radio magic. And
well, anyway, I was going to make a comment on your age, but I've done enough of that.
I'm looking here just at the list of some of the people who stopped by and visited you. Louis Armstrong, Dizzy Gillespie, Mel Torme, Buddy Rich.
Wow.
That's quite a lot of people to get on an overnight radio show in Boston.
They would come into a number of jazz clubs that we had at the time. Paul's Mall, the Jazz Workshop. George Ween had a jazz club in Boston at the time, Storyville. Oh, yeah, almost everybody who came to Boston. To have a jazz show on a commercial AM station like this one, for example, was unheard of. Even now it's unheard of. I mean, it's on public radio, it's on college radio, but there are no jazz shows on commercial radio. And the fact that on the major station in Boston, and HDH was the major station at the time, that I had a 6 hour a night, 6 day a week jazz show was unheard of. The manager hated it. But unfortunately for him, we had a good listening audience.
Yeah, that's very unusual. I mean, even nowadays, I think there's how many jazz stations in the country that have that as a format, and it's usually lower power stations outside of big cities.
Yeah, fewer and fewer of them.
Yeah,
not too much. At the time, though, college kids were very much interested in jazz. The demographics were.
Yeah, but at that time, the advertising agencies didn't give one flying hoot about college kids.
No, they didn't. We had a lot of commercials on, though, because these clubs that featured jazz,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
they would call the station and say they wanted to advertise. And the station's sales department thought they were crazy, but they took their business anyway. So we had a lot of commercials despite that. And I think I could have run for mayor of Harvard University at that time. I mean, we had tons of listeners at Harvard, MIT, all the colleges around. It was kind of fun. I really liked that.
Yeah, that was a rather unique bit of programming there. And, something that's never, I mean, it was there for, 10 years, you say? About 10 years?
Yeah, about that. Yeah, 10, 11 years.
Yeah.
So I loved it, and we did have just about everybody who came into Boston. You were mentioning that, Scott, some of the people... just about every jazz person in the world was on the show at one time, plus the comics like George Carlin and Professor Irwin Corey, do you know that name? He's a real nutcake, but a very funny guy. I mean, tons of people, just about everybody who came into town, plus movie people who are plugging their movies and all that kind of stuff. It was a great experience, you know, for me, because I was only 82 or 83 years old at the time.
Where was the station operating out of? Were you fairly near these clubs, sir?
HDH was in two different locations. When I first got there, we were on the 8th floor of the Paint Furniture Building in Park Square. And I remember when I first got the job, this is after 11 years, remember, it didn't come that quickly. 11 years of knocking around the worst stations in the world. I remember being up in the men's room. Can you say men's room, Bob? Men's room. And I would look out the window of the 8th floor, and I'd say, I'm going to conquer you, Boston. I mean, I was so pleased to be at a really first-rate station. Did you ask me a question? I forget where
the station was located.
Oh, yeah. Then we moved out to Morrissey Boulevard. We got Channel 5 television. And so they built a radio and TV set up on Morrissey Boulevard. It's now a part of the First National Bank, which is... I think there's something kind of ironic or awful about that. I can't remember what. Near BC High School and across from the Globe and out that way.
Well, I know HDHFM signed on somewhere around there also. Were you simulcast on the FM overnight?
Yeah, most of the time we were WCOZ was FM because it was cozy radio, very similar to WJIB's policy. It was a relaxed kind of gentle music, and so they called it COZ, which was cozy. I don't know what it is now. Stations have changed names so often and formats. I really don't know. People have to tell me what they're doing now. I've lost track.
What is it, Gem in 94.5 now? Yeah. Is that what it is?
Is that what it is, yeah.
Playing very loud rap music.
Is that what they play now?
Yeah. Far cry from Cozy.
Yeah, we were Cozy, HDH, and Channel 5. And it was fun.
Do you know that station was WCOZ back in 1981 or 82 for 1 week?
Which station was that?
No, that wasn't 94.5.
That was 100.7.
That was 100.7 took those colors for 1 week in Boston about 15 years ago.
Really? You know, at one time we could say, well, you know, this station, it's W, whatever it was, and it used to be. But I've lost, you know, I've been, as you mentioned, I've been in radio all these years. I can't follow what station is what and what used to be.
Well, it's hard to believe that the WHDH call letters are not on radio here.
I feel badly about that.
Something missing.
I remember when you and I were talking just around the station right after that happened, and it's incredible.
I wondered whether they put EEI there. Some people say it's because there's WHDH-TV, and therefore they couldn't infringe on the call. I don't believe that's so. I think they just wanted to be able to say WEEI-mas. I think so. Do you think so, Bob? You're a big radio station mucker. You know how you guys operate. I think that's probably the reason.
That's part. I think some of it also they'd already established that WEEI and sports radio image.
But HDH always had a bigger audience than EEI ever did.
Well, the thing is that the hottest thing in town pretty much was Don Imus out of New York, and he was on WEEI. If it weren't for Don Imus, WEEI's ratings would have been pretty flat throughout the day, or, you know, moderate or so.
Right.
But that was the first thing that made that station start hopping in the last 10 years was Don Imus, and you almost like, you know, I guess it was easier to put WEEI over on 850 than it was to say Don Imus is jumping from EEI to HDH, you know.
Well, that's right. Something, you know.
Well, the station up in New Hampshire that carries Imus also, WNHI, and I think they call it WNHIMus. It's the same thing.
Oh, really? Well, where is that?
North of Manchester. It's in some town, Belmont, is it?
I think it's licensed to Belmont.
Belmont, New Hampshire, which is not even a crossroads, but a T. Okay.
I think the studios are in Laconia.
Yeah, it could be, but it's a Class A 3,000 watt FM station. And so that's probably the logic. I just somehow don't think it's quite right to trash the HDH call letters on radio that have been there since longer than you've been on this planet, okay?
Oh, no, I love that station. It was my first real break in radio.
For the sake of keeping EEI's call letters, really. It doesn't make sense. I thought HDH overall was more powerful.
No, when people talk about something being on WEI, I still think of the 590 thing. I don't think of HDH and 850. But I think it's sad, and I know that the night they went off the air as HDH, one of the producers, this was not a management decision, and it was just one of those things.
Oh, yeah.
You know about that, the flushing of the toilet, flushing.
Yes, as do I.
I mean, that really teed me off very badly, because that station meant a lot to me, and it was a powerhouse, and suddenly it's gone, and that's their farewell, a flushing of the toilet. I thought that was so awful.
Yeah, I guess it was somebody who was about to be fired anyway.
It hurt you, okay? But maybe the person who did that, and maybe we should explain to our listeners what happened here. We kind of like halfway described it, but maybe that was their way of saying, well, this is what you think of the station, you big bad business people, or something like that, you big bad owners. You're flushing it all down the toilet. You know, it could have been a positive for WHDH image that this person was doing. You can take it two ways. You're like,
I suppose so. I just felt badly when the call letters went off the air.
Well, of course, you remember the time when WHDH TV Channel 5 went off the air also in 1972.
I sure do. I was there at the time. That was an interesting episode also.
It's pretty much the same thing as when WBOS left country. They played the song Take This Job and Shove It for an entire day.
I know. Yeah.
But that was definitely saying, okay, as the heck with country music, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, that was making a definite negative, comment on country music. We're going to do something more interesting now.
Because I'm still not sure why Channel 5 WHDH-TV went off the air. I know the reasons that were given, but they, especially in view of the new FCC rulings, none of that
would have never
sense.
Gone off. Oh, no, nowadays it never would have gone off.
Never would have. Yeah, it was kind of nice because HDH, radio and television, were very much united. Those of us in radio also did some television. Television did radio, which kind of was still like one family. BZ, where I work now, is doing more of that. They're rebuilding studios next to TV. Radio and TV will be together, and they're trying to combine the two a little more. But up to this point, as you know, Scott, television was on one side of this big building and radio on the other, and it was like two separate countries. I still think to this day people in television have no idea that we exist on the other side of the building.
They're learning slowly.
Yeah. Well, we have our radio people now on the TV side. But HDH was like that. HDH was like that in general all the way through. It was just one big group of people all working for both sides. I thought that was nice.
We should probably explain for those of our listeners who weren't around here in March of 1972. Or those who had just been born.
I actually saw the switch over myself at 3 a.m.
What happened was the old WHDH-TV, Channel 5, which was licensed to the Boston Herald Traveler, as was HDH Radio, lost its license. The reasons, as you'd mentioned, Norm, that were given was that the commission was concerned about the concentration of ownership with two newspapers at the time, an AM radio station, an FM station, and a TV station. And what happened was a new Channel 5 license was issued to the Boston broadcasters people, and they went on the air with a completely brand new station, different transmitter, different studios, as WCVB. In the meantime, you were over on the WHDH side of it. What was the mood? I imagine the mood over there must have been...
It was gloomy, especially when then they began selling the equipment from the old HDH. It was really sad. As a matter of fact, the night that you're talking about, that we went off the air, was about I had a talk in Needham, and I had to drive right by the new Channel 5 WCVB studios. I don't think I saw this. I don't think you can see this from the ramp going up and by there. But it seemed to me that there was an awful lot of celebrating going on, and I was a very heavy heart. And the talk in Needham, having gone by that studio that was going to take over from us within the hour or two that I drove by, was a very sad thing. We had a lovely family. A lot of the people who were at the old HDH, though, did go over to the new Channel 5.
And John Henning was one of them, right?
John Henning, yeah. Yeah, just about everybody on the air did, and then eventually the technical staff, the cameramen and all that, went over. They were offered the job. Some debated whether or not to stay or whether to go.
I do remember the valedictorian address by Harold J. Clancy just before the last movie, and it was quite a interesting thing to watch.
Yeah, the thing was kind of funny because we kept getting... Prior to that, we kept getting rulings from the FCC. The FCC would say something, and we'd have a meeting, and they would brief the staff on how we were doing, and then the people there would say, This is good for us. We're glad for that ruling because this allows us to, whatever the jumbly's kind of talk was, the FCC would make a ruling. You better be off the air by noon tomorrow or else you'll all be lashed within an inch of your life and you'll all die. And we'd have another meeting. That's a good ruling because that means we can now file an appeal and all that kind of stuff. And it went on like that. And a lot of us wanted so much to believe that we still had a fighting chance to stay on that we believed what they said. And right until the time finally when we were off the air and we thought, I think they've been lying to us. Either that or they were so optimistic and totally unrealistic. I don't know.
Well, when they were doing the testing on WCBB for several months before the switchover, the writing was pretty much on the wall from what I gather at that time.
Oh, I think it was on the wall right from the very beginning. I just think those of us on the staff who didn't know the behind-the-scenes thing kind of believed them and wanted very much to believe we'd remain on. And maybe they believed it, too. I don't know.
It's all you can do in that type of a situation.
Yeah, that's right. And the sad thing was it killed a newspaper. Rather than diversify news gathering and stuff, it killed the Herald and Traveler pretty much.
And I believe at that time the Record American merged with what was left.
Well, that was later on, yeah. But they were owned by the Herald Traveler, and the Traveler especially wasn't making any kind of money, and so the television station really kept them going. And without the television station, the newspaper pretty much failed.
Was there some question at that point about what was going to become of HDH Radio?
Yeah, they were sold soon after that to another company, and we often wondered, what would it be like? They had a new administration staff, obviously, came in. And it was a little bit later when I left, I went to WEI, because I was doing I was on days by that point and doing kind of comedy things, stuff that would just drive you crazy with humor, Scott. You would love it, you, Bob. And the management came in, and I remember the new manager said to me, you know, Nathan, your stuff is okay, but it's a little too hip. Hip was a hip word then. And most people don't understand this. It's a little over their head, so you're going to have to tone it down. That kind of, and I was doing skits and all kinds of bits and stuff. And anyway, so...
And as a consequence, you jumped over to an all-news station.
Yeah, but I thought, well, rather than hang around here and just be a top 40 kind of disc jockey, which I never wanted to be, I thought at least I'll go over there and I'll do news. And I had a feature there for a while. It was really kind of awful. I've looked at some of the old scripts. I don't know why they kept it on as long as they did. But it was called Nathan's Notebook, and I would look at the news and try to do kind of a humorous angle of it. But I did do, I had a chance to do some other stuff. It was a much freer format when I first got there, and it just tightened up.
Oh, everything tightened up in radio, I mean.
Yeah, it got to be kind of boring.
It's pretty tight right now. except on, say, BZ with the talk. I mean, that's one very valuable asset to the community right there, having a good laid-back talk show like that, and that's wonderful. It's nice to see that there are stations still in the Boston area, which there are quite a number of, that do their original programming, that still do it in English and still do original programming, which isn't too often these days, because usually in your middle markets or your smaller markets, it's all satellite programming. And
well, even in Boston, though, at nighttime, it's pretty much that, too.
Well, BZ hasn't succumbed to that, which
we're
is
the
good,
only station
would.
Like
yeah.
that, except for the FM music station. Don't you think, let me ask you now, you're the owner of WJIB.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Don't you think a lot of the fun kind of programming has gone out of radio?
Sure as hell has.
I mean, you have talk people who are mostly very conservative and talk as though they're saving the world from destruction.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You have record shows. We play more rock, less talk. We play 19 records in a row.
Right. Yeah.
And so let's get into our medley, and I'll see you a week from next Wednesday when it's time for me to give a time check.
And every time I open the microphone, I got 7 seconds to say everything I have to say.
I mean, you have a few...
Then the time clock shuts it off.
You have a few morning
all
shows
hits,
on
all
FM.
The time, right here.
A few morning shows on FM that kid a bit.
Yeah.
But there's not a whole lot of fun. There's not a lot of off-the-wall kind of stuff.
Radio is not... I think the only thing that made it even come back to make it seem like it was maybe in the 50s or 60s or early 60s before it got too formatted to death was
the fact that these morning zoos are on and things like that that are pretty off the wall, and from our point of view anyway, us being old,
bunch of old crocs, true.
Okay?
True.
Now, that has brought back some excitement into radio, if you want to call it that. It doesn't excite me too much because I think it just goes overboard, and I think it's detrimental to our society. Well, that's a conservative viewpoint, isn't it?
I'm not a conservative, but I agree with you. It depends on what programs you're talking about.
Yeah,
you're talking
okay.
about, for example, a Howard Stern show.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't mention his name because he gets more publicity he deserves. I don't think that's the direction for radio.
I don't think this should be the direction of America either.
No, it should not. I think he's a foul-mouthed, bad-taste person, and I can't understand why he's so popular.
Because that's America is turning into things like that, and he's helping it turn even more so that way. It's just something, it's like any kids that listen to Howard Stern listen to people who were just barely going to the edge back in those days, 20 years ago, back in those days was, or 40 years ago, when you might have said Overy instead of whatever the hotel's name was, okay?
That was Avery.
Okay, now that was going close to the edge then, and that was the Howard Stern of that, whether you knew it or not, in a way.
Now,
you didn't do it regularly. You didn't do it regularly.
Oh, no.
But had you had jokes like that, or slips like that, and you found out it caught on, that's the level it was. Now we talk about human parts all over the place, okay? I mean, that didn't exist.
This is airchecks.com.